everybody. Welcome to season 3 of Boo, My Dad Says. My name is John.
And I'm Becca.
And we are your tour guides through the world of the paranormal.
We've got a whole lot of history, a whole lot of mystery, and a whole lot of weird.
So sit back, relax, and get ready for a spine-tingling time. Well, dear, how we doing tonight?
Oh, man, it's been a crazy afternoon. We went to lunch after church. It's Sunday when we record. We went to lunch for Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, babe.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Oh, you're so welcome, even though you're not my father. But what ifs?
I am the father of your children.
That's right. That's what you are. And so we went to eat, and then we moseyed around. We had family coming by. Our dog smells like a butt. You know, just a normal day.
Well,
I think
yeah,
I
can't disagree with the dog smelling like a butt.
I think I just took his breath away. She takes mine away.
Oh, yeah, but she is a very cute dog, though.
She's cute, and it's a good thing she's cute because she smelled bad right now.
Yeah, she's going to be due for a bath tonight,
I haven't unpacked the stuff yet. I can't find the shampoo. That's the problem.
Okay, yeah,
when you
we are still unpacking, y'all.
I mean, 40 cough something years of garbage in a house. And yeah, it takes a while. It takes a while.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. But anyways, hey, at least we are able to do new podcast episodes for you all.
Yes, and I got a new microphone today. I'm feeling fancy. Oh, I'm so fancy.
Yep. So we are definitely on the same par now with our recording equipment, and I think that's going to help with our sound and everything just coming together, sounding actually maybe like professional podcasters.
I don't have my face in a board either, so that's always happy.
Yeah, my makeshift recording studio for her.
It worked. It worked. It did what it was supposed to do, but we're moving on.
Sort of
did what it was supposed to do.
But anyways, yeah, we've gotten Becca moved into a little bit better piece of equipment, and I think that will help our sound and our, I guess, to sound a little more professional and things like that. And that is what I'm all about, is I want to sound, you know, like we actually know what we're talking about.
Totally.
And not totally
scooting
in on this thing by the seat of our pants.
Well, that's how I roll all the time. And for anybody who actually knows me, IRL, in real life, you know that's how I roll. So it would just be inauthentic if I, like, tried to be fancy. Because that ain't me at all.
But anyways.
John's like, wrap it up.
No. But we are getting ready. We do need to talk about our social media.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, let's just get on with the topic.
No. But for those of you who are out there and are using that little thing called Facebook or Instagram or the Twitter, you know, you can find us out there on looking for at Boo My Dad Says. Or if you want to send us a personal story,
you can totally do that by sending us an email to john@boomydadsays.com. We'd love to share your story on the air.
Before we get into the content of this week's episode, I do want to give a shout out to a podcast that I really enjoy a lot. It's called the Creepy Show Podcast. And the thing I really like about it so much is that the episodes are somewhat shorter, so you can get a whole episode in if you've got a short drive.
Well, that's pretty handy.
They average around 20 minutes. Hmm. And the narrator, he's got a very distinct voice. And it just really works for the paranormal podcast. So let's go ahead and roll that trailer.
Roll that beautiful bean footage. You knew I was going to go there.
Are you ready to listen to something really creepy? Why, you should listen to the Creepy Show Podcast at creepyshowpodcast.com. We talk about paranormal, UFOs, Bigfoot, true crime, and more. Available on your favorite podcast platform.
So where are we going this week, babe?
Well, we are coming closer to home.
Are you in my front yard?
No, not quite. You mean our front yard?
Oh, whatever. Did I say mine or yours?
Yours.
Oh, it is my yard.
Well, you know what they say about marriage. You know what? Mine is yours and what's yours is yours.
Bingo. You got it.
Anyways, we're coming closer to home. Down towards Middle Tennessee a little bit, and we're going to be talking about what might be possibly one of the most well-documented cases of a haunting ever. If not, at least I'm pretty certain it's the most documented case in the state of Tennessee, and that is the Bell Witch.
That doesn't sound like anything I need to be a part of.
Oh, but you need to at least sit here and make a snarky skeptic remarks.
Oh, perfect. I can do that.
So, all right. Well, let's get started with the Bell Witch.
Oh, dear. Ooh. We don't need sound effects.
That wasn't a sound effects. That was my spooky voice.
Oh, okay. My bad.
So, our story starts back way back into the early 1800s when John Bell moved his family from North Carolina to the Red River bottomland.
Well, I'll just stop you right there. That was his problem, was that he left North Carolina. That's his problem.
It worked okay for you, dear.
It did most of the days, but not, but you know, that all those hauntings wouldn't have happened if he'd stayed in North Carolina.
Oh, now I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. North Carolina has its own share of hauntings too. Mm-hmm,
allegedly.
So let's start over here.
So sorry, my bad. You told me one of my snarky remarks. I was just
I just got
aiming to please
get the story where it needs to be.
Gotcha.
In the early 1800s, John Bell moved his family from North Carolina to the great state of Tennessee.
Alleged great state.
In the Red River bottomland of Robertson County, settling in the Red River community, which later became the present day Adams, Tennessee. Bell purchased some land and a large house for his family. Over the next several years, he acquired more land, increasing his holdings to 328 acres. Dad, if you're listening to this, I know you're drooling because you love land.
Oh, wow. He does.
And he cleared a number of fields for planting. He also became an elder of the Red River Baptist Church. John and his wife, Lucy Bell, had three more children after moving to Tennessee, which that means they actually had seven children in all.
That's a lot of children.
That is a lot of children. The Bells had a very happy and successful early life in the Red River settlement. The end.
Perfect. Let's go on.
I had to do that because I knew...
That sounds like a great story.
But then the perfect and early success began to get a little spooky. The hauntings began sometime in 1817 when John Bell witnessed an apparition of a strange creature resembling a dog. It actually, from some of the accounts, say it actually looks like it had the body of a dog and the head of a rabbit.
Oh, that's just, somebody's been in the white liquor. Somebody has been in the secret sauce.
Well, Bell fired at the animal, but it disappeared. Then John's son, Drew Bell, approached an unknown bird perched on a fence that flew off, and it was of extraordinary size. The daughter, Betsy, observed a girl in a green dress swinging from the limb of an oak tree. Dean, a person who was enslaved by the Bell family, reported being followed by a large black dog on evenings that he went to visit his wife.
That sounds like Sirius Black.
Oh, yeah. Snuffles.
Snuffles or a what do you call it? What's the haunted dog? Like it was the omen. If you saw it, you were going to die.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's it called? Yeah. I can't remember.
I can't think of it either, actually.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to look that up.
There are definitely some differing accounts that some say that the house began showing signs of hauntings immediately after the rabbit dog incident. But I'm not really sure about where the bird or the other dog kind of fit into that timetable.
The Grimm.
The Grimm.
We should. Sorry, I had to just look that up real quick.
Yeah, that's okay. Right.
Continue.
So, yes, things escalated after he shot at the rabbit dog. And the family began hearing beating sounds on the outside walls of their log home. The mysterious sounds continued with increased frequency and force each night. Bell and his sons often hurried outside to catch the culprit, but always returned empty-handed. In the weeks that followed, the Bell children began waking up frightened, complaining that rats were gnawing at their bedposts.
Oh, dear.
And not long after that, the children began complaining of having their bed covers pulled from them and their pillows tossed into the floor by a seemingly invisible entity. You know, it seems like that's a very common occurrence in some hauntings. You know, people have their bed covers yanked off. I know when I did the episode about the Queen Mary, that was one of the things that happened there. The maids would go into the room on the ship, is like a specific room. They would make the bed, they would come out, and then they would go back in. And this was in the room would not be occupied by any guests. I knew what you were going to say, dear, so I had to catch you before you jumped into that rabbit hole. The room would not have any guests occupying it. They would come back an hour or so later, and the bed covers would be jerked off into the floor.
Interesting.
Now, back to our story. As time went on, the Bells began hearing faint whispering voices, which were like, at first, too weak. They were very weak. But after several nights of witnessing these strange things, they were also experiencing people being slapped and you know, things like that. But they wanted to keep this a secret. So they actually didn't tell anybody about this stuff happening for almost a year.
So was it because they thought they wouldn't believe them, or they wanted to try to figure it out themselves first?
I think it's actually the first part. They didn't really think, you know, who would believe them. And then, you know, which I think people would have been more inclined to believe them back in that day and age, but I guess there would be, you know, some stigma attached to this. You know, you've got some sort of, you know, malevolent spirit in your house. And, you know, did you do something to bring this on yourself? Did, you know,
totally.
You know, kind of, you know, things like that. And so, yeah, I think they wanted to keep the story to themselves there for a little bit. But now, you know, eventually just things got to be too much. And so they went and they spoke with a friend of theirs. His name was James Johnston. And Mr. Johnston suggested that, you know, more people needed to be told. And this was actually after he and his wife also stayed the night in the house. And they had the same experiences too. They actually had their bed covers pulled. They were slapped, and so yeah, it was a you know, it was not one of those things where it just happened to that family. People would come, and it, you know, they would have experiences too. So soon after this, word of the haunting spread, with some people traveling great distances to see this witch. What they had called it was a witch. The apparition began to speak out loud and was asked, you know, who are you and what do you want? And the voice answered feebly, I am a spirit. I was once very happy, but have been disturbed. The spirit offered diverse explanations of why it had happened, tying its origin to the disturbance of a Native American burial mound located on the property. And they also sent Drew Bell and Bennett Porter on an unproductive search for buried treasure. With the emergence of full conversations, the Spirit repeated words for two sermons given 13 miles apart at the same time. The entity was well acquainted with biblical texts and appeared to enjoy religious arguments.
Well, the devil knows scripture.
Yes, he does. And I mean, this actually sounds, you know, some of the stuff definitely sounds almost demonic in signs, but.
And this is where I leave you. I'm not kidding.
As another amusement, the witch shared gossip about activities in other households and at times appeared to leave for brief moments to visit homes after an inquiry. When asked who and what it was, it gave different identities. It once stated that it was the witch of a neighbor woman named Kate Batts. And legend has it that John had a bad business deal with the Batts family. And this is the story that many people believe. And from then on, this unseen force was called Kate, the Bell's witch. But now, there was also another account as to what may possibly have been the spirit. And that was, and while John Bell lived in North Carolina, he murdered an unpleasant overseer. So I don't know if maybe he was mistreating slaves and John murdered him. But some people think that he may be the ghost of that overseer.
Oh, so, that followed him there.
Yeah, so there's definitely two, I guess, what do you want to say?
Theories?
Two theories there. But, you know, we're going back over 200 years. So some of this stuff, you know, it's kind of hard to track some of this down. But now, word of the supernatural phenomenon soon spread outside the settlement. And even to Nashville, where then Major General Andrew Jackson became interested in the so-called Bell Witch. In 1819, Jackson heard about the disturbances at the Bell home and decided to pay a visit and investigate. Now, Jackson was, he actually knew the Bell family. Two of the younger Jackson sons there had actually served under him in the, the Revolutionary War? Or,
I don't know.
We'll just leave it at that. Two of the Bells served under Jackson at one point in time. So, as Jackson's entourage, consisting of several men and well-groomed horses and a large wagon approached the Bell property, the wagon jolted to a sudden stop. It had become stuck in a muddy creek bed and the horses were unable to pull it. At least that's what the men thought. After several minutes of cursing and trying to coax the horses to pull the wagon, Jackson proclaimed, "By the eternal, boys, that must be the Bell Witch." Then suddenly, a disembodied female voice told Jackson that they could proceed and that she would see them again later that evening. They were then able to proceed across the property, up the lane, and to the Bell home. That evening, Jackson told old war stories while his entourage set up their tents in John and Lucy Bell's yard. One of the men claimed to be a witch tamer. After several uneventful hours, he pulled out a shiny pistol and proclaimed that its silver bullet would kill any evil spirit that it came into contact with.
Well, that sounds like a vampire.
Actually, I would say werewolf.
Vampires can't do silver, can they?
Typically, it's werewolves that silver bullets.
Oh, just kidding. Yeah.
But that's, you know, but that's also a legend. And
oh, that's real.
Well, that could actually, I think that's Hollywood.
That's maybe. Hollywood.
but I don't know. He went on to say that the reason nothing had happened to them was because whatever had been haunting the Bells was scared of his silver bullet. Immediately, the man screamed and began jerking his body in different directions, complaining that he was being stuck with pins and beaten severely.
For heaven's sakes.
A strong, swift kick to the man's posterior region
from AKA an invisible... his butt.
Yeah, his butt. From an invisible foot, sent him out the front door, and angry, the entity spoke up and announced that there was yet another fraud in Jackson's party, and that she would identify him the following evening. Now terrified, Jackson's men begged to leave the Bell Farm, I guess because they didn't want to be found out for their atrocities or whatever.
Something.
They're probably stepping out on their wives or something like that, for all we know. Jackson insisted on staying. He wanted to know who the other fraud was. The men eventually went outside to sleep in their tents while continuously begging Jackson to leave. What happened next is not clear, but Jackson and his entourage were spotted in nearby Springfield early the next morning going back to Nashville. Some allege that Jackson later proclaimed, "I would rather fight the British at New Orleans than fight the Bell Witch."
Hmm.
Now, here is the thing, though, with this Jackson encounter. Let's pause here for a minute. Paranormal investigator Benjamin Ratford, as well as Brian Dunning, concluded that there is no evidence that Andrew Jackson visited the Bell family home. And the reason that is, during the years in question, Jackson's movements were very well documented, and nowhere in history or in his writings is there evidence of his knowledge of the Bell family. According to Dunning, the 1824 presidential election was notoriously malicious, and it seemed hard to believe that his opponent would have overlooked the opportunity to drag him through the mud for having lost a fight to a witch.
Carl, that's a fair point.
Yeah. I mean, he's a politician. You can't show any signs of weakness or anything like that. Carl Lindhall, affiliated with the University of Houston, writes that the Andrew Jackson encounter is an example of how belief and history mix together in the formation of legend. Such legends, which may persist in a locale for generations upon receiving a media treatment, can spread far outside of the area where the legend originated. So there is definitely, more evidence of the fact that Jackson never experienced this. But, when you tell the story, it certainly... it's interesting to say, a future president also witnessed
supposedly did that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So now let's get back to the main part of the story here. At times, the spirit displayed a form of kindness, especially towards Lucy, John Bell's wife. And it has been quoted, the most perfect woman to walk the earth.
Whoa, that's some big shoes to fill.
Yeah, those are some big shoes to fill there, dear.
The most perfect woman. That ain't me.
The witch would give Lucy fresh fruit and sing hymns to her and showed John Bell Jr.
The witch is singing hymns?
Yeah.
So it's a Christian witch. There you go.
There you go.
That's ridiculous.
The witch would also show John Bell Jr. a certain measure of respect. But now things got worse.
As they tend to do in these types of stories.
It seemed that Kate had two main reasons for visiting the Bell home. And the main one was to kill John Bell.
And what?
Yeah.
So she liked the wife, but not the husband.
Well, now, what is the funny thing is, I think it wasn't a matter of her actually liking the wife. It was a matter of psychological warfare.
For heaven's sakes.
This is one of the things I read. because they were like, well, why was she being kind? But what if she wasn't doing it as an act of kindness. She was doing it in a way to, you know, to hit Lucy's, I guess, a weakness for her. Because, you know, Lucy, you know, is having to sit here and endure her family getting tortured, you know, being slapped and called names and just all these things just done to them. And, you know, how bad does that make, would that make her feel that this entity was actually, you know, giving her food and singing to her and things like that?
That's pretty weird.
Yeah. But anyways, you know, that's where the story is going.
So they were going to come kill the dad.
That was the primary reason. The second reason was to stop John's youngest daughter, Betsy, from marrying a certain neighbor named Joshua Gardner. And we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay, we're jumping ahead.
Yes. This is just kind of getting to the main meat and potatoes of the reason, because these are two back-to-back stories at this point. The entity continued to express disdain for John Bell, relentlessly vowing to kill him. Bell had been experiencing episodes of twitching in his face and difficulty swallowing for almost a year, and the malady grew worse with time. By the fall of 1820, his declining health had confined him to the house where the malicious entity continuously removed his shoes when he tried to walk and slapped his face when he recovered from his numerous seizures. Yeah, this thing's a bad mamma jamma.
That's crazy town.
Her shrill voice was heard all over the farm, cursing and chastising old Jack Bell, the nickname she had given him. John Bell breathed his last breath on the morning of December 20th, 1820, after slipping into a coma a day earlier.
Did the witch put him in the coma?
We're getting to that. Hang on.
My bad. I had no research to do for this one, so this is all new to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, hey, it's vacation, dear.
Wait, what? We're on vacation?
Well, you're on a research vacation.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I was like, wait, where are we going?
So, yeah, he slipped into a coma the day earlier. Immediately after his death, his family found a vial of strange black liquid in the cupboard. John Jr. sprinkled two drops on the cat's tongue. The cat jumped up into the air, rolled over in midair, and was dead when it hit the floor.
Can they do that to our cat? Sorry, did I say that out loud?
Yes, yes, you did.
Sorry, that cat's the Dickens.
He is not that bad.
He is that bad. Have you met him?
He's a good kitty.
Sure. Anyway, we digress. Squirrel.
So, the entity then exclaimed, "I gave old Jack a big dose of that last night, which fixed him." John Jr. tossed the mysterious vial into the fireplace. It burst into a bright blue flame and shot up the chimney. John Bell's funeral was one of the largest ever held in Robertson County, Tennessee. People attended from miles away, and three preachers, two Methodists and one Baptist, eulogized him.
What? Sorry. One Baptist. That's funny.
That's almost like a Baptist, a rabbi and a priest all walking to a bar kind of thing.
It's something.
As the crowd of mourners began leaving the graveyard, the Bell Witch entity laughed and sang a song about a bottle of brandy. Her fervent singing didn't stop until the last mourner had left the graveyard. The entity's presence was almost non-existent after John Bell's demise, as though it had fulfilled its purpose.
I finally got what I'm looking for.
But she wasn't completely done.
Oh, dear.
Over time, Betsy Bell became interested in these names.
Betsy
Lucy Bell. Betsy Bell. Yeah. Over time, Betsy Bell became interested in Joshua Gardner, a young man who lived nearby. With the blessings of their parents, they decided to marry.
But now, Dad's dead.
Yeah, I think some of these stories kind of blend just a little bit.
Okay.
So I think we kind of pulled them out.
That's because they're not real. Oh, sorry. Did I say that?
Pulled them out for context.
Gotcha.
Betsy, okay, I lost my place.
I'm so sorry. That was my bad.
Over time,
Betsy Bell got the blessing of her folks, which apparently one was dead.
Well, okay.
It's true.
Everyone was happy about their engagement.
That's my cue to hush.
Almost everyone. The evil, mysterious entity became furious and repeatedly ordered Betsy not to marry Joshua. Yeah, now this is where it's going to get a little
Oh, dear.
Well, not like in a gruesome sort of way, but just like a cooties kind of way. But so Betsy and Joshua's former school teacher, Professor Richard Powell, had been noticeably interested in Betsy for some time and had expressed interest in marrying her when she became older. By some accounts, Powell, who was 11 years Betsy's senior, was a student of the occult.
These people are crazy.
Well, occult. Here's a kicker. Ventriloquism
was an occult. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, it was a occult, comma, ventriloquism, a mathematical genius, and well versed in horticulture and geology. Horticulture. I'm sitting here thinking
he's on drugs. He's eating the mushrooms.
No, I'm sitting here thinking, what if the Bell Witch was actually this guy?
But,
because, I mean, maybe he could mix up some kind of poison or something.
Get some potions going there.
Well-versed in horticulture. He was secretly married to a woman in nearby Nashville, Esther Scott.
These people are crazy.
During the time that he lived and taught school at Red River.
And when he's mooching on this girl, this 11-year-old difference of his student.
Yeah.
He wants to marry her, but he's married to somebody else?
But he was married to a lady in Nashville, but he was perceived as a happy-go-lucky bachelor.
Apparently.
And he expressed his unwavering fondness for Betsy Bell. According to early accounts, and this thing is, we don't know at what age, at least from what I found, she was when he was his
teacher. Well, marrying age was 12 back then.
Yeah, pretty much.
I feel fairly confident in that assessment.
Anyway,
I'm gonna get in trouble again this week.
No, you're not gonna get in trouble.
I'm obnoxious. It's okay, I know.
Well,
I actually have a new name for you.
You're not necessarily a skeptic.
I'm the sarcastic.
You're a
one.
Cynic.
A cynic. I like that better.
Yes, because a skeptic is someone who is open-minded.
Oh yeah, no, that's not me.
not to the point of. That they could be convinced. They don't believe, but they don't. But it's not that they couldn't be convinced. They're open minded.
Okay, so yes, it's you and the
cynic is
just openly mocking.
Not gonna believe no matter what you show them.
Boom, that's me.
Yeah,
retitle this sucker.
Yes, my wife's the cynic, y'all.
I'm the cynic. I'm down with that. I can go with that.
Now, let's get back to our story.
Oh yeah, where were we?
Shiny object.
Squirrel.
According to early accounts, Powell politely expressed his disappointment with Betsy's engagement to Joshua and wished her a long and prosperous marriage.
AKA, I'm going to haunt you.
Mm-hmm.
You witch.
Betsy and Joshua could not go to the river, the fields, or the cave to play without.
To play? Is that what they're calling it these days? What's happening here?
Now, Betsy and Joshua, they were about the same age. So when they were probably, friends first, and then they kind of.
Sure. That's what we'll call it.
Yeah. The constant pressure was there. No, the constant pressure was more than Betsy Bell could handle. And then on Easter Monday of 1821, she met Joshua at the river and broke off the engagement.
Oh, dear.
So this, you would almost think that finally the Bell Witch is gone. But not quite.
You'd be wrong. We've determined that was a lie.
In April of 1821, shortly after Betsy Bell had broken off her engagement, the entity visited John Bell's widow, Lucy, and told her that it was leaving, but would return in 7 years.
Why 7 years?
I don't know. 7 years is just one of those numbers.
Bad luck.
The entity returned in 1828 as promised. Most of the return visits centered on John Bell Jr., with whom the entity discussed the origin of life, civilizations, Christianity, and the need for a major spiritual reawakening.
Oh my gosh. That is totally redonkulous.
This is it's a wild story, dear. It is a very wild story.
I get that.
Of particular significance were its predictions of the Civil War and other major events, but some of which she did miss.
Of course she did.
The entity bade farewell after 3 weeks, promising to visit John Bell's most direct descendant in 107 years.
107 years.
The year would be 1935, and the closest living direct descendant at the time was Nashville physician Dr. Charles Bailey Bell, a neurologist and John Bell Sr.'s great-grandson. And now, here's the thing, though. Nobody really knows if this entity ever actually returned in 1935.
Well, that's good, because it didn't. Of course it can't tell you that, because it wasn't there.
You know, some say that she didn't return, or that if she did, they were not aware of it. But many say she never left the place to begin with.
Mm-mm-mm.
So, yeah, that is the Bell Witch.
She's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that whatever that is, that thing is cray-cray.
Yes.
But it is a very, I do like the story because there are lots of twists and turns. And is it legend? Maybe.
Yes,
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, you know, it's very well documented, but a lot of the...
I wouldn't necessarily say documented.
Well, the biggest problem with the documentation of this story is...
it's all a bunch of lies.
No, not necessarily. Oh. I mean, the Bells did exist.
They were all eating the mushrooms because they liked the horticulture.
You know, Betsy did marry the school teacher.
Gross.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do about it?
Well, apparently the witch was going to do something about it.
No, she didn't want her to marry the old man. She didn't want her to marry Joshua.
Mm.
So
that's crazy.
But the biggest problem with a lot of the documentation of this story. Oops, sorry, I bumped my mic.
You're flailing around over there, man. Calm down.
All right. The biggest part of some of the.
Shut up, Becca.
The biggest part of some of the documentation of the story was that a lot of it was not written down immediately as it was happening. There was some stuff that was written several years after the fact. So, you know, memories condemn over time.
Stories get bigger.
But, you know, definitely there was... for sure, some elements of the story that you would almost, yes, attest to a demon trying to get a foothold in that house.
That's something getting a foothold. That's just crazy. Yeah.
Well, guys, that is the Bell Witch. You know, hey, get in contact with us. Tell us what you think. You know, let us know, you know, your opinions about it. You know, go out and join the Facebook group. Talk with us. You know, we have a good time out there. I throw out some funny memes, let y'all know about the latest episodes. And just to let you guys know, we do have, I have a Patreon episode that's going to be coming out next week, probably on Saturday. And the Patreon episodes are going to be about some of the cases of Ed and Lorraine Warren. And this first episode is going to be about Annabelle.
Am I supposed to have a reaction? Who's Annabelle?
Annabelle is about this doll that was...
a sweet, adorable little Cabbage Patch.
Well, actually, it was a Raggedy Ann doll.
Raggedy Ann. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. I like Cabbage Patches. I did
when
I was a baby.
You would not like this doll, believe me.
I'm sure. I'm sure, allegedly.
Oh, it's pretty well, it's a fairly well documented
case. And we will just
too.
State that this is the reason it's going to be on Patreon, because I need to sleep. And so I don't yes, have to be present for those episodes.
The Patreon episodes are a little scarier.
A lot scarier.
Because
I'm a chicken.
I do those episodes solo.
So that I can sleep.
Yes, so that Becca can sleep.
Mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Oh, I keep hitting my mic now. So sorry.
Preach, woman, preach.
I'm getting wild over here saying I don't want to get the scaredies.
But hey, guess what?
I don't know what.
We have a new review this week.
Ooh, what's that mean?
That means I get to read a review of our show.
Oh, cool.
Yes. And our review is...
please make Becca shut up. That's what it is.
No, that is not true, because most people tell me that you are the reason they listen to the show.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. I'm a crackpot. That's what
I
am.
Well, I can't deny that.
Exactly.
But this review comes from Q52012.
I feel like we're on Star Trek. Is that like C-3PO?
Yeah. It's a 5-star review.
Oh, we like that.
Yes, we love those 5-star reviews. Awesome. Great podcast. Very interesting.
Aw, thanks, 472364 Hut. You're going to bust your mic out. I can't remember all those letters you said.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'm pretty funny.
You are funny.
Actually, I'm just pretty silly. There's a difference. Yes. I'm told that there's a difference.
But anyways, yeah,
I'm
folks.
So sorry. What were the real name?
Huh?
What was that person's real?
Q52012.
There we go. Q52012. 5012.
Yes.
Got it. Thank you for your kind words. I'm not actually making fun of you. I'm just being silly. So no worries. We appreciate you.
Yes, we do very much. These reviews make it so much easier to go out and do these shows. And that leads to my call to action for all you listeners out there who do listen to the show. Especially
call to action.
A call to action.
Oh,
yes.
Dear. Spring into action.
Oh, she said the word.
He hates that phrase. My mom always used to say that when I was a kid. She would say, like, if we were trying to get ready to go somewhere, spring into action. And I say that. And John, like, cringes. And he's like, oh,
it makes me want to just sit down and just, like a donkey,
refuse.
And just sit there
I'm
and refuse
not
to
moving.
Move.
A donkey. You are a donkey.
And the only reason that it does that is because you have used it like in the mornings.
Well, that's the best time to use it, you goon.
Which honestly, the funny thing is I'm actually the early bird.
Oh, heavens, yes. I am not a morning person.
Actually, I am.
So if I am having to call people to action, it's probably 10 or 11 o'clock.
Yeah. So actually, I am the hardly sleep at all bird.
Well, whatever.
I go to bed late and get up early.
I go to bed early and I get up not too late, not too early. I am on summer vacation. So, like, I feel like that's a good excuse.
Vacation.
Hey, you could be a teacher. You could be a teacher. You could work in education. You take like a 87% pay cut.
Well, one of us has to put food on the table.
That's true. And it ain't me. It ain't me, but I enjoy it. So, at least there's that.
But anyways.
What were we talking about?
Our ratings and reviews.
Oh, yeah. Do a review us. We like that.
Yes. The call to action for...
call to action.
Specifically for
that's
our
what it
iPhone
was.
And iPad users.
If you're an Android, tough chicken. We don't need you. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That's
the majority... and the reason I'm talking about iPad users or iPhone users is... well, maybe up till recently in the past... Apple users consumed the majority of podcasts.
Hmm. I wonder why that is.
We're talking about like the overwhelming majority of podcasts. And mainly it's because podcasts was...
An Apple thing first. Interesting.
Or at least it gained a lot of traction on Apple first. And then finally groups like Spotify and other podcast applications started coming out. And then it became a little more widely...
A little more mainstream.
Yes. But, you know, almost half of our listeners, 46% actually, are on Apple Podcasts. But the reason I'm asking for these ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts is it moves us up the search results. There's something about their algorithm that the more ratings and reviews, five stars.
Gives you credit or credibility, I guess. And so it will recommend a podcast or a program that gets more reviews and ratings will be pushed higher because obviously more people like it. So it feels like it'll be liked by more people.
Well,
that didn't make it like a sense.
So what did you think of the story overall?
I think these people are crazy. I think there was a lot of moonshine involved, a lot of crazy teachers hitting on their students, and an occult of ventriloquism. I just don't really know what to think.
Well,
Makes me thankful for where I am today in the world. How about that?
Yeah.
I don't have any old teachers hitting on me. I don't have to worry about any demons around here. It's a good day.
All right, guys. Well, we hope you all have a... I wanted to leave it at that before you started sitting
before
there
and saying...
Before
I keep running my mouth.
No, when you sit there and say you don't have to worry about demons because that's when you're going to get whammy.
Well, yes. I don't worry about the demons, but I mean, demons and angels and... I mean, there's certainly spiritual warfare going wrong. I'm not denying that a bit. But I know whose side I'm on. So can we leave that there?
We could leave it right there, which I'm on the same side you're on.
All right. Well, good. I'm going to have to stab you then.
My wife is violent.
Just a tiny bit.
Save me,
he says. Yeah, right.
She is imprisoning me.
Oh, please. You are spoiled rotten and you know it.
Yes, I know where my bread's buttered.
Bread? Who's got bread?
Well,
I like bread.
I like bread too.
Okay. Y'all have a great week. Thanks for tuning in.
Yep. See y'all on the Annabelle episode for the Patreon. And then next week, we'll have another episode for you. I'm not telling you what it is.
I was going to say, where are we going next week? We're not telling.
It's a surprise.
Okay. There we go.
All right, guys. Good night and God bless.
See ya.